Okay, the next argued case is number 162622, Gonzalez against New Life Ventures. Mr. Fuller, you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the court. The patent claims that are at issue in this appeal are patent eligible under 35 U.S.C. 101. They are not directed to ineligible abstract ideas. They have been tested by the jury below, found valid and infringed, valid under 102, 103, and infringed by the defendant. The patents at issue identify, confront, and solve a very specific, very real problem in the internet search arts at the time of the invention in 2000. Specifically, what the patents identify as the problem solved is the problem of far too many irrelevant search results that are provided and returned to a searcher when a word search was performed.
I confess that the analogy was somewhat done to death by the other side, but is it not true that you have right in your own written description an analogy to a library? Isn't that what you're saying? You're doing something, and you even said to the examiner that this is just a very traditional concept, but we're just doing it on a computer.
Sure. What the patentee did in the illustration that is in paragraph 2 of the specification was he used a metaphor to describe the scope of the problem that he was confronted. Metaphor just to illustrate the scope of the problem. We have all of this information that needs to be found. And the closest he could come to was to say, look, okay, if you have a library full of information, what's the best way to solve this? Is the best way to solve this to just go word search everything, which is what search engines did at the time? Or do you do something different? He did something different. Now, in the analogy or the metaphor that Your Honor is referring to, he says what a hypothetical librarian might do in that situation would be to put information about all of these books on a card, right? And so what the defendants have taken that to mean is a run-of-the-mill library card catalog. Mr. Gonzalez repeatedly throughout the specification, throughout the file wrapper prosecution, uses the word label to refer to the run-of-the-mill, common, ordinary meaning of the word label, something that is on a package or on a book or on a card that describes something. But we know from the court's claim construction order in this case, in which the defendant below argued that digital label should carry its plain and ordinary meaning, the court construed it differently. The court said it's not a plain and ordinary label. What Gonzalez has done is something different from a plain and ordinary label. The court's construction of digital label is something symbolic of unambiguous qualitative information about an item or a thing. That's an unconventional use of the term.
Isn't that what the index cards would also show in a library? Something symbolic?
There's nothing symbolic on a card. What's on a card is information. And actually what Mr. Gonzalez teaches is the opposite of a traditional card that might be found in a library, which is just the information. It's just the information itself. There's nothing symbolic on the card. What Mr. Gonzalez teaches is in his search protocol, we're going to ignore the information. We're not going to do a search based on the information. We're going to do something unconventional, something new, something specific. We're going to use digital labels, which are, by definition...
I'm sorry, I worked at a library, so, you know, I may be a nerd, but the library cards had symbolic information about how you could find that book in the particular places in the library.
That would be, if Your Honor is referring to the numerical numbering system mm-hmm. on the card, that the numerical numbering system on the card isn't symbolic of the information that's on the card. That is more akin to what Mr. Gonzalez would call a category tree, wherein, as Your Honor in experience would know, that it's a nested category, right? You have these numbers that eventually funnel down into a specific genre of books, and all those books are put in the same place. Mr. Gonzalez says these types of category trees are rigid and unacceptable for purposes of online searching, and he distinguishes and disparages the category tree structure specifically. And so his concept to use digital labels, which are symbolic of information about a website, is fundamentally different in operation and far more flexible and eliminates the problem that he confronted in the art, and that is too many search results that aren't relevant to what the searcher was actually looking for. So we disagree completely with the premise that defendant is putting forward that a card catalog does the same thing.
But so point to me then in your written description where you think this, what you refer to as a specific implementation of a technological solution to a technical problem, can be found.
Certainly. I'll be referring to the 665 patent, which specification begins in the appendix at 139. The problem that is addressed, as the court is aware, is at column one and rolls into column two, where Mr. Gonzalez talks about the existence in the art of too many search results. Owners of websites cannot get their websites found. Searchers cannot find what they're looking for. The specific implementation of digital labels, for example, in column three, which is appendix page 140, talks about this gathering sequence, and then that information is converted into something new that didn't exist in the art before and doesn't exist on a card catalog, for example. We're going to convert that into something new, a digital label. The digital label then, per the claims, is what is used to conduct the search, not the information. And that is the opposite of what happens.
So you refer to column one and going into column two, and that's just some background. I don't know what you're pointing to. So where is the technological solution to the technological problem that you say puts you in EnFish?
Well, in column three, beginning at line 25, for example, at appendix page 140, is exactly where Mr. Gonzalez talks about converting things to a digital label. He also says that further down in column three, line between lines 50 and 56, for example, talks about the advancement where using the digital label structure, what the searcher is looking for can surely be found in a high relevance list instead of hidden in a sea of irrelevance. That identifies his solution to the problem. And then in the claims, we know that his solution involves multiple steps. Primarily among those is we're going to get our information from the owner of the information or the creator of the website. That's step one. That information is then converted into something new, which is symbolic of the information. That's the second aspect of the claim. Then, according to the asserted claims, when a search is conducted, the search is conducted for and based upon the labels, the symbols, not upon the information itself, which is what all of the existing search technologies at the time would do. And what Mr. Gonzalez says is because the words themselves, the information themselves, or the information itself, is vague and ambiguous. You don't know what words mean out of context. So his digital labels put context to the terms, and that makes them more specific and eliminates the unnecessary, irrelevant search results. So Did I answer Your Honor's question?
I still don't see the technological solution to the technological problem. I see that you say it's on a computer, but I am not getting from the written description or the claims the discussion of the technology, the way the technology is done differently or somehow gives you some advantage over what would be the abstract idea.
Sure. It's because it's a software implementation, the advance in the technology is the way the software functions. And we know that software claims can advance non-abstract advances.
Another aspect of the same approach, which is troubling, there isn't here, it just says collect the information. I don't see any algorithm or the next technological step of implementation of the generalizations, and that seems to be what the district judge also was concerned about.
Well, if you're talking about the specific aspect of the claims where the information is collected,
to understand mm-hmm. what led the district court to decide as a matter of law this did not meet the requirements.
Well, the district court, the magistrate judge identified multiple aspects of the claims that were non-ordinary, non-abstract. The district court judge then, in a three-sentence analysis under step one, just said, this is just abstract because a human could do it. And that was the end of the analysis under step one. As far as the technological steps, being a software implementation, that's the advance in the technology. It's a software art.
You're saying we're doing this with software. I hear you say those words, but where's the software implementation described in the patent?
Okay. For example, back to column 3 at lines 25 to 35 is an example of the coding that would be required. We also have...
says this can be affected with almost any programming language capable of handling instructions.
That's right.
In the form of if A, then B.
That's the conversion step. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then the searching step is, because you've created in the conversion step a fairly unnatural, that is non-ordinary language code, MNSCH, is it?
Yes.
The searching is just searching for that, and you'll get, right? And you'll get a very small subset of what you would get if you searched for, what does it stand for, schools offering scholarships to minorities.
That's exactly the advance that Mr. Gonzalez advances.
So it's just searching, it's the ordinary process of searching, but you've created or allowed subscribers to create kind of new artificial terminology which radically shrinks the universe of what will come up because people don't ordinarily use the word or the concatenation of symbols MNSEH in order.
That is certainly the advantage that the claims achieve, is what Your Honor is saying. And that is the technological implementation in the code that says, okay, instead of searching for this word, which is what the ordinary expectation would be, I am going to, instead of searching the data, I'm going to search something that I have created separate and apart from the data that symbolizes the data, which will eliminate all of the ambiguity. Yes, Your Honor, that is precisely correct.
Like you have an example, you have a Chinese restaurant, and if you search the whole country, you might not get that one. But if you search Chinese restaurants in New York City, it might come up. So
correct.
How is that? I don't understand the technological solution to the technological problem there.
I keep repeating myself. I don't know that I can describe the technological advance any more clearly.
You're just saying if you put more data in, if you narrow your search site, then you can make the search more precise.
Well, Gonzalez does describe what's described as a host website. Not all the claims are limited to a host website. Host website would be a set of websites that have something in common, for example, all of the restaurants, right? So that's one element to the claims. Not all the claims are directed to a host website. Certainly, there's no requirement in the claims, and Mr. Gonzalez has not limited himself to the situation that Your Honor just described, this example in the specification, where you have, just by function of having a smaller subgroup of sites, by definition, you're going to get better results. What Mr. Gonzalez talks about is the better results are achieved not because I'm just searching a smaller subset of websites. Mr. Gonzalez talks about searching all websites on the internet. But the result and the advancement and the benefit is achieved because I am no longer searching for the information. My search is not based on information, which is ambiguous. My search is based on something new, which the court has construed as being a unconventional label, something that is symbolic of information. And that is where the advance in the art comes into play, is in the fact that we're using something symbolic, We're not using the information. It's a fundamental paradigm shift in the way the information websites were found at the time.
Let's hear from the other side. We'll save you a few minutes. Mr. Brown.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'll begin by jumping right in on this issue of symbolic. And does this symbolic somehow make a label special and something different from what has been known for years in library cards and in supermarkets on bags of potato chips, as they say in the file history? And the answer is no. There's nothing about this symbolic that makes anything different or anything special. So even if we were to just set aside the question and assume that there's nothing symbolic on a library card, which is not correct. There are things which are symbolic on a library card. But if we were to just set that aside, if you were to take the information on a library card and put it into a computer, it's necessarily become symbolic by that fact. You have ones and zeros in a computer which are now representing the information that is on the library card. And you would search for those ones and zeros in the computer whenever you did a search in any kind of database that has been around since the 70s, as we showed.
But his point would be that that is too high an abstraction because he's not just talking about searching for a book. He's saying that you can search for categories of books and you can provide all kinds of sub-data. So I want a book. I also want a mystery, but I want a mystery written by a certain category of author. I want it within a period of years, and I want to have, I want to have it addressing a particular time frame. I mean, that's a lot more information than you would get on a library card.
The way you put it there, that is absolutely true, Your Honor. There are many layers of categories in a way. I think the Library of Congress number comes very close to what you just said because it says within this category it's within fiction, and then within fiction it might be historical fiction, and within that it might be mysteries related to the French Revolution or something like that. So there is a drilling down that occurs in the library.
But his point is that on the computer, he says at this point in time, that really all you could do is keyword searches. And a keyword search, as we all know, having been frustrated by keyword searches, don't get you all that far. Don't narrow things as much as you might want to narrow them.
So I want to make 2 points in response to that. I think, number one, it's factually incorrect, and we've shown that in the record. So there were sophisticated database searches available at the time. That Mr. Gonzalez himself admitted in his testimony that he didn't invent multi-parameter searching. That was already available. It was already being done on computers. The SQL article that we put in the record also shows that. So factually, I think that's incorrect. I also want to address the fact that that's just not required by any of the claims. So the claims here require a single parameter in the search. And in none of this argument did you hear anything saying what you just described in your hypothetical and connecting that to the claims. So even if Mr. Gonzalez had that in mind, which I dispute, but even if he had, that's not what we're arguing about here. What we're arguing about here is what do these claims require? And just to explain the point in particular, the most specific claim, so I think there would be no dispute that in the 807 patent, the second patent, the claims are only require a single digital label, and that would be male or female. I think the patent uses the example of a 0 to indicate male and a 1 to indicate female. The closest that they come to any sort of multi-parameter labeling is in the 665 patent, where in claim 1, and this is on page APPX0150, you do have to gather multi-parameter qualitative data. But when you get down to the element which requires the search, so the gathering, that's the first element in claim 1. If you go down to the element that starts with manipulation in claim 1 of the 665 patent. It says that you have to match parameters stipulated by an entity conducting a search and represented in the digital labels, and here's the critical language, according to at least one of the presence of, absence of, numerical or other value contained in, numerical or other value not contained in, any one, all, and any configuration of the labels. So in other words, if there is a presence of a variable in any one of the labels, you've satisfied the language in the 665 patent. There's no requirement that you have to conduct a multivariable search.
And the dependent claims don't do that either?
Correct, Your Honor. None of the claims that are at issue do that. Though I would submit that that's not even pertinent, because even if there were a requirement that you had to do a multivariable search in the claims, and that was what we were arguing about, number one, that's still possible with library cards. Number two, it's admitted that it's old technology, admitted by their inventor, demonstrated by the uncontested evidence. So if it's routine and conventional to use a database to perform a multivariable search, that routine conventional technology can't be used to demonstrate that they came up with some sort of technological invention. I think what's particularly important here is when you look at the record, it's unambiguous that the sole inventor stated repeatedly in his provisional application, in his patent itself, and in the file history, that what he was doing was taking something which was old and well-known by his own testimony and his own statements, and applying it to a new context, the context of websites on the Internet.
Can I ask this? My general recollection is that the context in which we have said, and the Supreme Court indicated in Alice, of taking something from outside the computer world and saying, use a computer to do it, maybe had the following difference from this case. This case is one in which the computer context, namely the internet context, already had a well-established, contrary, different arrangement, rather than taking, you know, the a process for selling out in the world and saying, you know, put the information on a computer. This is saying the internet search systems that are in place and everybody is using are actually, you know, established and different from what has gone on in the non-internet world. Let's do the old world in the new world. Is there anything to be made of that? I think that's what they're trying to do in invoking DDR and Bascom, which are probably the two most relevant cases, that there was a way that the internet was set up, and in those two cases, somebody did something different, say, change that.
Right.
And this is like that, even if the change comes from something familiar.
I agree that that's the story they're trying to tell, that my opponent is trying to tell. I don't agree that it's correct, or even remotely correct. I think you can tell from within the context of the patent itself that that's not correct. It's inconsistent with the patent. The patent itself talks about performing a word search within what it calls a hybrid digital label in column 6. Second of all, there's a direct admission from the inventor that searching for single parameter digital labels was commonplace before his invention. And then it was not something he admitted. Not something that he invented. So I don't agree with the sort of factual premise. I do think that is the story that they're trying to tell in order to draw the analogy that you just described. But number one, it's factually incorrect. And number two, I don't think it works, because I don't think even if it were true, it would bring this case into the kind of situation that you had in Bascom or DDR. So I think something that's very important to understand is, my sense from reading the 101 cases is that there's a very big difference between a situation where someone has created a new algorithm, and the algorithm may not be patentable on its own, but they've taken that new algorithm and they put it in the context of a specific process. That type of case where the abstract idea or the unpatentable part of the claim is new is a very different situation, where what you have is an idea like you had in Alice, where it was something, it was a financial practice that had been going on for a very, very long time. And then they've taken that old abstract idea and tried to clothe it in the language of a computer and a database and the internet and argue that it is now something that is patentable. I would submit that there's a different weighing that occurs, and I'm not sure I can articulate very well how the Federal Circuit, your court, has done, but I think that's a very different thing. And I think that what happened in Bascom and DDR, the two cases that you are describing, and I think it comes out in the way that you described it, is there was a sense that the unpatentable part of those claims was something that was unconventional and different. Here, nothing could be further from the truth. There is express admission by the sole inventor that he didn't invent it, that it was commonplace beforehand. He draws an analogy in his patent to library cards. In the file history...
Well, he may concede that digital labeling was not something he invented, but his point is that he believes he invented a better way to search those labels once they are put in place.
I don't think that's correct. I'll read the quotes are in our brief. I can read them again. I don't think that's correct at all. So this search for the symbolic label, I mean, to quote from the patent, it says, an example of two-parameter labeling is to label a list of people. In computer field A, place a 0 or a 1 to indicate if a person is a male or a female. And when he talks about how to do the search, he says, and this is in column 3, well, I'm not finding it immediately, but it's in column 3 and it says, you scan the database. So scanning a database for something like a 1 or a 0 that's representative of something, there's just no way he's going to argue that that is novel. It's clearly not. It's not something that he invented. He admits he didn't invent even multi-parameter searching through a database. Again, that's in our briefs.
Do you want to get to your cross-appeal before you sit down?
Yes, Your Honor. So I think fundamentally the issue on the cross-appeal...
Well, let me just ask this question. It seems to me, fairly enough, you just described and had to do some work to describe the difficulties of identifying the precise boundaries of cases like DDR and Bascom. Doesn't that tell you that it was not exceptional for them to think they could overcome the 101 hurdle in this case? Because even by 2016, there were significant areas of grayness.
Your Honor, the answer to that would be yes, if that was the only evidence that we had. But it's not. And the core evidence that we have here is that Mr. Gonzalez knowingly pursued claims.
Well, but the other thing they stress, of course, is that the jury went their way. It's very difficult, isn't it, to say that in the context of everything that gets here, it was so exceptional as to require attorney's fees. Is there an answer to that?
My answer to that, Your Honor, would be to come back to the same thing. We didn't have an inequitable conduct claim in front of the jury, but what we have now is very clear evidence that he made false statements to the patent office.
You say very clear evidence. I think that's a little of a stretch. You said that at trial he was shown the eBay system, and he said, well, yeah, that I didn't invent that, and that was there. But there's no evidence that he knew about that at the time that he was applying for this patent.
Let me be very precise about what I think the most important evidence is. Okay, I'm going to read you three passages, and I'll give you the citations for them. So he stated to the patent office, there is no prior art at all for website labels. That's 1617, APPX 1617. There's the quote I've already mentioned. He said that while labels are common in physical form, it has not heretofore been used or proposed in digital form for websites. That's 1375. And then again, the simple fact is that websites do not have labels. 1615. He has admitted, and I can read it as well, that he did not invent digital labels for websites. That admission is squarely inconsistent,
I thought in context what he was saying, he now realizes he didn't. At the time he said that, he's not saying he knew that it was a lie.
I see. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. There is an argument about eBay, which we are also pressing and we made in the briefs. The quotes that I just referred to here and the quote where he admits that digital labeling was in fact commonplace had nothing to do with eBay. In fact, if you look at that passage, which is 1879, and then also if you look at those two passages, he was talking about the Yahoo website, not about eBay. And he admits that Yahoo had digital labels and that it was commonplace.
Right, but that's not the full extent of the claims, right? He has that the claims require digital labels plus, right? People's sources creating them and so on.
Correct, Your Honor. So just the admission that he didn't invent digital labels doesn't invalidate the claims because there are other elements. But what it does do is show that when he said at least three times, and I think there are more in the briefs, there is no prior art at all for website labels. It has not heretofore been used or proposed in digital form for websites. The simple fact is that websites do not have labels. When he makes those statements to the Patent Office, he knows they're false. And that makes this case different. That's important. The title of this patent is Digital Labels for Websites. It's the core of what he is arguing he invented. Mr. Fuller got up here and argued that the fundamental thing is something about digital labels are special because they're symbolic, and that's what makes this case patentable. It's the core of it, and he knows he didn't invent it. And he admitted that in his deposition, and he admitted it in trial. Now, we got to trial. We shouldn't have got to trial. We filed a motion 9 months before trial, before a claim construction hearing, making our 101 argument. That was not ruled on. We were never given permission to file our summary judgment motion until 2 weeks before trial. That finally occurred. The judge held the trial before resolving.
Right, and the magistrate judge actually thought that this was 101 eligible.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor.
Doesn't that indicate that maybe even if you're right under 101 in the long run, that reasonable minds could differ on that?
I think you'd have to read the opinion in order to fairly assess that. But let's suppose that reasonable minds could differ on the 101 issue. I think this is similar to the question Judge Taranto asked me. What makes this case different from just a 101 case is here we have an inventor who's admitted that something is true that is directly inconsistent with something he repeatedly told the Patent Office in order to get his patent. And at a minimum, that is evidence of bad faith in pursuing this case. That's a very, very significant fact. When you add into the fact there are 13 settlements, and that's a lot, 13 settlements for an average of $65,000, which is less than 10% of the cost of defense. If you look at the AIPLA evidence that we put in, the average cost of defending a patent case against a non-practicing entity where the amount is at less than $1 million, so all the minimum categories, the average cost was $820,000.
Well, right. I mean, I was the one who wrote some of the opinions that said this is a factor that the court could consider. But, you know, it could all be true that he thought his best case was against you all, and he funded that case by smaller settlements. That doesn't make it necessarily bad faith. I mean, he got pretty far. The jury said you were infringing.
I think all of that is true, Your Honor. None of it by itself might get us there. But I think when you put it together, it does get us there. At a minimum, the district court should have looked at the fact that there are all these statements that were made to the Patent Office that are admitted to be false. That's very important. When you combine that with all these nuisance value settlements, and the argument in response is, well, we made it to trial. The reason we made it to trial is because our client refused to settle. And it can't be held against us that we refused to settle. We did everything that we should have done. Long before the case got into discovery, before depositions were taken, before claim construction, we had sought permission.
But if you were so sure that he didn't invent it, then why did the jury not rule in your favor under 102 and 103?
I should have tried a better case, Your Honor.
Right. Let's hear from the other side, and you get a bit of rebuttal on the cross appeal. Okay, let's see. Hey, Mr. Fuller, you can respond to the cross appeal or use your time on the merits?
Am I limited to the cross appeal at this moment, Your Honor?
Okay.
Or can I address some of the points he made relative to the 101 issue?
Well, whatever you need to tell us.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. First of all, we know from cases like Diamond v. Deere that even something like a mathematical equation, even something that may have been technically old, can still be put to a new and useful patent-eligible result. And that is exactly, to the extent we believe what my co-part just said, that everything was old. Gonzalez didn't invent anything new. Well, even still, you can take something that may have been individually known in the art. That is not the test. We don't take individual pieces from a claim, discount them, and then say what's left. We look at the claim as an entire ordered combination set of steps. And in this case, what we have is Mr. Gonzalez inventing something patent eligible, which we've discussed. This is not a novelty case. We're not here on 102-103. That seems to be what Mr. Brown wants to go to. The question is not, did he invent something new and non-obvious? The question is, at this juncture, is what Mr. Gonzalez claims eligible to even get through the front door and be considered for 102-103? We have this coarse filter of 101. And we believe Mr. Gonzalez has satisfied at least step one of the Mayo test in that his invention is not abstract. But even if we get to the step two of the test, we believe that he has inventive concepts added to that take it beyond the realm of abstract, and that's all in our briefs. As to the attorney's fees question, to your point, Judge O'Malley, at minimum, reasonable minds can differ on the 101 question. We have Magistrate Judge Payne, who wrote a very well-reasoned report. I do invite Your Honor to read Judge Payne's opinion because I think it's very instructive to where this court is today. Judge Payne considered step one in its entirety far more completely, quite frankly, than Judge Gilstrap did in his order where he found the claims to be non-patent eligible. And then on top of that, even though he found the claims to be eligible under step one, he continued on to step two and said, even if the claims are drawn to an abstract idea, I still find the claims have enough to get them to, A, avoid the preemption question, which is the overriding concern behind the exclusionary rule in the first place. The Gonzalez claims are very specific. They do not preempt some building block of ingenuity like looking for information on the internet. To the extent they preempt anything, they preempt exactly what the patent law says they can preempt. They preempt only what is claimed. They preempt a method where you, A, source information directly from the owner or creator of a website, very narrowly. Then they preempt the conversion of that information into something symbolic. Again, very narrow, not a building block. Then, to make it even more specific and concrete, he says, we're going to search based on the labels, not on the information. This is not a case where preemption is a concern. Counsel hasn't even argued preemption. Judge Gilstrap, in his opinion, the word preemption doesn't even appear in the order. Judge Gilstrap didn't consider preemption at all, which again is the overriding concern of the 101 exclusionary rule. If the court has any questions on the attorney's fees issue, I'd be glad to answer them, but plainly, there was no inequitable conduct claim made. Mr. Gonzalez did what every patentee does in the patent office. He argued, my claims are novel, my claims are non-obvious, and as the court recognized, the jury in Texas agreed. There is nothing extraordinary or exceptional about this case. To the extent the court even reaches the attorney's fees question, the court should completely reject and affirm there was no abuse of discretion on the part of Judge Gilstrap.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Brown, you get the last word, but the last point in the discretionary standard is something you need to overcome.
Your Honor, I'll make 2 points. The first is, I don't think reasonable minds can differ on the 101 question in this particular case, given all the evidence in this case. So, with the statements that were made in the summary of the invention, drawing an analogy to a library card, with the statement made squarely to the examiner repeatedly that this is taking an idea that is already common in physical form and putting it only into digital form. Given that, I don't think there is room for reasonable minds to differ on the 101 question. And on the attorney's fees question, I just want to come back again. It is not a situation where all he said is, oh, my patent is new. He made statements to the patent office which have been directly contradicted by what he was forced to admit in his deposition in the case. I think that is an unusual situation when the inventor admits that he didn't invent the core piece of what he claims to have invented, what he titled his patents, what he told the patent office repeatedly he invented, and he admits he didn't invent it. That is unusual, and that makes this an exceptional case. Thank you.
Any more questions? Any more questions? Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.